And good evening to everyone. This is Moto Chat with Harold, Kathy and EB, and also Ian tonight, who's here to talk to us about fuels and oils.
And also the Samrats.
Definitely about the Samrats.
And also about the Samrats. Okay. How is everyone tonight?
Good evening, everyone.
Oh, a little cooler than what I was yesterday. And as I said before, we've got rain forecast so for the weekend, so I don't know whether we're happy about that or not, but my garden will be happy at least anyway.
I'm not happy that your garden's happy because that means that the weeds are going to grow as well.
Exactly. Now, look, I would like to say a hello to Michael Holland, who's turning 70 on May the 27th. Now, the reason why I'm doing that is because Michael sends us heaps of letters, lots and lots of information in his letters, and I think it's only fitting that we celebrate his 70th birthday a little bit tonight.
Exactly. So happy birthday to you, Michael. We hope you have a lovely day.
Okay, what are we going to start talking about the Samrats, Ian.
Okay.
So tell us who are the Samrats?
Samrats, well, we are the riding side of MRA, and we do a ride every fortnight. I make the choice where we go, and there's so many places you can go, and I'm doing so many things I can to make it interesting for people.
What does SAMRATS stand for?
SAMRATS is South Australian Motorcycle Riders Association Touring
Squad. That's the one.
And there shall be a test at the end of this show.
Oh, it's been so long since I've been asked that.
I like asking the obscure questions.
Yeah, I know, it drives me nuts.
So basically, what's the format? It's an informal ride, formalised ride?
It's a formal ride. We have a ride every 2 weeks. I work out which direction we're going, what roads we're going to take. Normally, I pick a nice hotel for lunch because a lot of the guys seem that they like this nice lunch in the hotel on a Sunday. We have an organised ride leader, which is myself, and then we'll have a tail end Charlie. And tail end Charlie will always bring up the rear. We have corner marshalling, and we move at a pace where everyone's comfortable. And so we make sure that no one gets left behind. And the main thing is we enjoy the ride, we enjoy the day, we have a nice lunch together, mm-hmm. and at the end of the day, everyone's happy.
Yeah. Mm. Ian, what's the average age of the riders? Do you have
we're getting the older ones now. Mm. Our oldest rider is 73, mm-hmm. and he's still doing good. He gets stuck on his bike every now and then, so I've got to give him a push. You know, he just gets the front wheel stuck.
Is that the rider or the bike 73?
He can't get it out of the hole, so I've got to push him out.
So the bike 73 as well.
I'll put him and the bike together. It's about 85. You know, but no, we range from I'd say 50 to about 73.
Yeah. And now Ian's actually just made mention of a very good point, is that a lot of gatherings have an award for the oldest combination, so therefore it's your age plus the age of the bike combined, and whoever's the oldest can walk away with a prize or a trophy of some sort.
That's right, you fight in motorbike rallies.
Yeah, they do.
And I could have gone in it this year and I would have won. But I updated with a new bike, didn't I?
You're a goose,
Ian. So I'm starting from scratch again. I lost.
Yeah, because actually we were at the Peregrine Rally last year, and I think the oldest rider bike combination was somewhere in the 100 and something.
Yeah,
it was quite incredible.
Well, my bike would have been near 16 years old. Mm. And with me, I'm pushing the big, 7-0.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the shame of it.
I think Harold's going to beat you on that one.
Yes, he will by 1 year.
Yeah. Mm. So how does it work? You meet somewhere?
Yes, we have a designated meeting point. It depends. Sometimes they say, okay, fine, we haven't been to south for a while because the guys come from the south. So I say, right, we'll have meeting points at the south, which is closer for them. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go north, which is closer for others. And then I say, okay, fine, now we go to the middle of town. So it's sort of... It breaks down that tedious journey of trying to get to the meeting places. So I pick OTRs, mm-hmm. which is the best place because I get good coffee there, so I'm happy with that. And
Fair enough.
These are the main places where we meet.
Service stations.
Service stations, yes.
I have seen people meeting at parks.
Civic Park.
Civic Park at Modbury in particular, but there are a lot of places that that bikes start from.
Yes.
But predominantly it is...
Just so that people can understand this, quite often on a Sunday morning at about somewhere between 9 and 10, you'll see groups of motorcyclists assembling for what appears to be no reason. Basically what it is, it's people getting together
for a Sunday ride. We get a lot of groups. Mm-hmm. And sometimes if I happen to pick the wrong... roads, I end up getting mixed up with other groups, and then everyone's got the same high-vis jackets on, haven't they? And the next thing I know, guys are turning left when they should be going straight on.
I'll try and buy you some pink ones, and then you won't get mixed up with anyone.
I'll be different.
And this is actually an argument that we've been making for some time, is that the idea of everybody wearing high-vis, all of a sudden everybody's wearing the same stuff, and you're part of the background, you are no longer identified.
An individual, you can't be sort of marked as that particular person. Mm. So I wear the orange on the right leader, the tail end Charlie. He wears the lemon, and of course, a lot of other guys wear lemon for high vis when they're riding, regardless. So. Yeah. And then you get the Ulysses comes along, then you get another motorcycle comes along, and they all have the same colours. And it's
as I said, pink is perfect.
It's mayhem. It is, you know.
I could get you rainbow if you like.
Yeah, I'd love it. Yeah, it'll do. But at times, because the guys, I have my number and I have Bluetooth, I get these phone calls. Where are you? We've lost you. I said, take a wrong turn, did you? Yeah, okay, fine. Our meeting place is such and such. Meet us there. I'll see you there in 15 minutes. Say, okay, done. So we have a communication, because there's one ride we had, and someone took a wrong turn here, someone took a wrong turn there, someone got delayed, and they got lost, and they were behind, and Tailing Charlie didn't see him. And the next, you know, I'm on the corner waiting, and I'm getting a phone call. Where are you? I'm here. And then I get another phone call. Where are you? Where are you? I said, I'm here. Where are you? He said, I'm down the freeway. And another one's over here. And I said, right. Where do we end up meeting? Mount Compass, I think. I said, Mount Compass. Just go.
Yeah.
And so we met up there and we joined up and got the ride on the go again.
Okay. In your rides and travels, have you ever got lost yourself?
Oh, yeah. That's when we have a really good ride, because I have no idea where I'm going.
as long as they keep following me.
Yeah, yeah. And I actually went on one ride one day. I ended up with McLaren Vale, I think I ended up. I said, oh, yeah, I know this road. And from vaguely remember from a while ago. So I turned right down this road and I'm going... I don't think this is the right road, you know. And we went on this ride, and I just go left, right, left, right, left, right, left, right. And I stopped, and I asked the guy behind me, I said, where are we? And he said, I don't know. So I turned right, and the next thing I end up in McLaren Vale. I said, yes, made it, you know.
So it's always a little bit of a mystery.
Yeah, that can happen, yeah, definitely. Well,
I have been on the bike with Harold on one occasion where he was leading the ride, and we ended up on a dirt road out in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody else followed suitably along behind, and we were all sort of stuck. And had to do a U-turn on a very narrow road.
It's a bit hard, especially on a dirt road with big rocks, you know.
Exactly.
If people were actually following me, I would guarantee that we would get lost at some stage. It's not a problem.
Yeah. So, for Google Maps at the moment, because it shows you exactly where you are.
I have a permanently mounted GPS. Mm. You know,
well, so it doesn't matter if you take the wrong turn, as long as you don't hit a dead end.
That hurts.
We've
experienced that one before.
Well, then the excuse is, look, this road looked interesting, it was worthwhile exploring, and we now know exactly where this road goes to.
Yeah. Okay, Ian, I'm going to ask you another question. How can people get in touch and find out where you're riding, where the ride starts
from?
Well,
you'll find that we're on Facebook. It's advertised. We get the flyer on Facebook. On the I think it's on the Sam Ratz webpage.
Yep.
I actually send. I've got a large amount of emails from members, and I send out a flyer and destination information where we're going to meet.
Yep.
And so you pretty well, you go onto the Sam Ratz site as well, to where we have the Sam Ratz, the the information for brides, what day it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on there, so it can be found quite easily.
Quite easily, that's good.
And if I wanted to get onto that email listing, what would I do?
You would have to send me a message and say, please join me up. Send me your email and I will put your email address on the email list.
Okay, and your phone number is?
It's 0427334843.
Aha. Uh-huh. And you're also on the you're also listed on the Facebook page?
I think so.
Okay. So you go onto Facebook regularly.
I'm not a real Facebook person.
I can understand that.
Okay. Yeah. Well, what we'll do is we'll actually just try and send a quick text to somebody who can fix that for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know the person you're going to contact.
Mm-hmm.
That person spoke to me on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
He was worried. Did you cancel the ride? I said no.
Okay.
So who can actually go on these rides?
Anyone. Anyone. I've had friends from members, they've sent me a message saying this is such and such, I'm a friend of Sam's or whatever, may I join? I said, by all means, please come along.
Yeah.
And if you give me your email address, I'll just send the information out to you.
So do you have to be a fully licensed rider? Can you be a P player?
Learners are fine. We've had learners along.
Yep.
And so what we do is we sort of work within the speed limits of the learner.
Mm-hmm.
We say to the learner, because they cannot exceed certain speeds,
mm-hmm.
so we say, right, the tail end, Charlie, you've got your learner, you've got a responsibility. He is not to exceed, because we don't want to get him into trouble.
Yep.
And at the same time, I will explain to the learner rider about our whole process of how we organise the ride. And the one thing I tell them is, I said, if you don't like it, don't do it.
Mm.
Some of us will move quicker because we're more experienced. But if you don't like it, don't do it. Just ride at your own pace where you feel comfortable.
Yeah. Sometimes it's very difficult for younger riders because they want to seem to be up with the
up
rest.
There with the big boys, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a difficulty. And what about bike capacity?
Yeah, doesn't matter.
Okay, so I've got a 1938 matchless single cylinder which has got a top speed of 70 kilometres an hour. How would I fit in?
Permanent tail end Charlie.
Thank you.
In fact, we might make you tail end Charlie.
It's probably the safest thing to do.
Yeah. Okay, so by the sounds of it, Ian, you've got a fairly busy job you're doing. How often are you riding?
Once every fortnight.
Once every fortnight. Yeah. Now, you do this all by yourself?
Yes.
Do you need extra help?
I've been asking for extra help, but everyone's saying, I haven't got a memory like yours. I can't remember the roads. I just make it up as I go along. Hopefully I get it right.
Hence you get lost. So, look, if there's anybody out there who's riding and would like to be part of the SAMRATS, give Ian a ring on his phone or text him through message him through the SAMRATS page.
Yes.
Yep. And I've actually just had it confirmed that Ian's details are actually on the flyer each
okay.
Each
get onto that if you'd like to be part of it. And look, it's great experience. To actually map out a ride is fun. I can remember going on a ride once where we went on all roads that had a hill in it.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter what the work, but had a hill in it. And we had a fantastic ride. It was about a 4-hour ride.
Mm.
That one brings me to another area as well that probably we can relate to here. We've all got adventure bikes, so therefore we can go on and off bitumen.
Yeah.
I would correct you on that. We've all got V-Stroms.
Yes.
Which is an adventure bike.
And mine is the cleanest because it doesn't go on dirt.
Now, that's an admission for an adventure rider.
Every now and then I hit a dirt road. You know,
Winters, if you're listening, Ian needs help, a lot of help. Now, okay, so the thing is that are you occasionally tempted to explore the unsealed road?
I think the best way for me to explore the unsealed road is to do that in my own time.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the riders, they have their road bikes, their tyres are different, all the bikes, the suspension, everything is completely different. And if I start taking these bikes down dirt roads, well, one, they're going to get grumpy.
Yep.
And two, they're not going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And if they have a little accident, they come off because the bike's not designed to go on that. So my best bit is I stick to good bitumen. and make them happy.
Yeah, I
good bitumen in South Australia. Where do you find that?
Just keep looking.
Yeah, I know there are ride groups that do specific on road and off road rides. Is that an option? Do you think for your group? Do you think you would?
No, most of the guys have road.
Mm.
All their bikes are road. There's only two or three of us have the adventure bike.
Yeah.
And I mean, one friend of mine, he has his adventure bike, and he mentioned dirt, and he lights up. Yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
You know, he mentioned dirt, and I'm thinking, oh, it'll take me 3 hours to clean it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, on what days do you normally ride? Do you ride on weekdays?
Sundays.
Sundays, okay.
It's every second Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
So we just had a ride finished Sunday, just gone.
Mm-hmm.
So our next ride will be on June the 4th, and it's looking good, the weather. So hopefully we will not have rain. And do you realise that Sunday was the second time this year I've decided to meet at Mount Barker to try and sort of, you know, spread that north-south thing around?
Yep.
And it was the second time it rained.
Well done, Ian. I'm impressed.
I'm going for three. I'm going for three.
Okay, on that.
Now, we're talking to Ian Lois here, and he's actually a ride leader for the Samrats. But the interesting thing about it is that before Ian got his current bike, which was which is now a new V-Strom, he actually had a Suzuki Bandit.
Bandit 1250.
Yep, and you took that through to 200
and 2,000.
Sorry, hang on.
202,000.
And that's kilometres. So it's not, that's not kilometres per hour, that's just kilometres.
No,
that's a lot of clock.
That occasionally when I first had it.
Yeah. So to equate, how many gallons and litres of fuel and oil does that?
I have no idea. I would do two services per year and fill out the petrol and ride it.
Right, but the important thing is that 202,000 kilometres on a two-cylinder motorcycle,
four
cylinders. Yeah. Okay, it had four.
Yeah, four so, cylinders, yeah.
But is still a massive distance that you can actually get out of a bike. Mm. So therefore,
that's what you'd expect to get out of a large bore.
Yeah,
BMW.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, they'll do 300,000.
That's the reputation they have.
Yeah,
three hundred thousand, easy.
Yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, you've got that bike to that mileage with very, very little wear and tear on it. It was in
showroom condition.
Mm-hmm. And I can vouch for that because it was in showroom condition.
Well, as you heard before, he goes on a dirt ride and he spends the next 3 hours cleaning his bike. So therefore, of course, he does that all
the time.
But to do that, you've actually got to do something special, and we'll talk about oils and fuel. Let's start off with fuel, though. What's your recommendation?
Well, I work on what the manufacturer recommends for the bike. So if they say it's 91, I just run 91.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this new bike I have at the moment, it's different compression, it's 95. I've run it on 91, I've run it on E94, I've run it on 95, and it's comfortable on 95. That's what the manufacturer
recommends. That's what the bike says, yep. And we've...
Sorry to interrupt, but how does it perform differently with those other fuels?
You'll find with the 91, I'm down on fuel consumption. You can see it drops because I actually get a readout of what kilometres per litre I'm getting. 91, I get maybe 1 or 2 k's less, but as soon as I go up to the higher octane, I'm getting up to around 21.5 to the litre touring, and that's sitting on the speed limit. And that's with my cruise control. Mm-hmm. That's why I love the bike. It's got cruise.
Oh.
So, so would you recommend to all bike users to use 95?
It depends if the manufacturer recommends it.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I've gone through the various octanes, and I found it's comfortable on 95 because that's what the manufacturer recommends.
Yep. Yeah. Now, I've done a fairly similar, I think you have too, Harold. You keep meticulous records on your consumption, and I know that I've tried 95, and I've found in that particular tank full, there was absolutely no difference whatsoever in my consumption. So therefore, you know, the myth that seems to go around, get a high octane fuel and it's going to give you better mileage and heavens knows what else. Mm. Well, that just doesn't quite work. So that's it.
Yeah. Well, see, if the bike is designed for 91,
mm-hmm.
that's what the manufacturer has designed it for, to get maximum performance and fuel consumption.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because with the 1250, you have a certain person in America. He does a lot of performance products for these particular bikes, and he gets his highest, dyno results running 91.
Right, okay, yep. Because
best results.
Yep, because we've actually did a little bit of research today, and there were two articles on fuels that I had a look at. One was actually produced by the NRMA, and I thought, okay, well, we'll just get a second one to balance that a bit. And again, an independent writer came up with exactly the same thing, that if the manufacturer recommends 91, 95 and 98, that's the one you go to.
That's right. That's how it works.
Yep. And the important issue that I didn't actually realise is, like, we see a lot of advertising for fuels, and they talk about, running a cleaner engine and doing all this and doing all that. And surprisingly, that the tests they've done on vehicles, that if you got a 91 rated engine and you throw in a 98, then basically what's going to happen is that it's actually going to burn less efficiently.
That's right.
And therefore your deposits are actually going to increase. You're not mm-hmm. cleaning your engine
mm-hmm.
at all.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that smacks very, very closely to false advertising.
That's right. So as I said, your compression ratio and the motor is designed to run a certain mm-hmm. octane. So it burns efficiently and gives you the best performance and best fuel consumption for that motor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If you want to have a cleaner engine, then there are other things that you can do.
Yeah.
I mean, you can put additives in and they will make a difference, but the cost of the additives is
not
really
effective.
Not going to be worth it in the long run in terms of efficiency.
Yeah, every now and then I might throw in the recommended dose of an injector cleaner.
Mm. Yeah, that does work, yes. Yeah, so I normally do that every service, 6,000. When I do that, I change the oil. I put, it's 20 litres, so you work out what your millilitres is to your tank.
Yeah.
I put about 20, 25 millilitres in every 6,000, and that just cleans the system out and it just keeps it running nice.
Mm. Yep. And now the other thing too with fuel is and that's something that I think people have got to become very much aware of, and that's they're talking about it in both these articles, was the idea of fuel that's been standing. Like you've got a 91 rating. Do you actually want to go through what the different ratings mean? To start off with 91, 99?
Well, a lot of it, it's just your octane rating, really.
Yep, okay.
It's to do, I think a lot of, I'm not an expert on this,
okay.
But the actual rating is to do with the compression of the fuel and the ignition of the fuel for the engine.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I'm no expert, but the higher compression you go up in the actual octane,
yep.
because it needs that higher octane mm-hmm. for that maybe I think it's a longer burn mm-hmm. for the higher compression.
Okay.
So that's why high performance vehicles will take high octane fuel, and they'll run more efficiently with the high octane fuel if they're supposed to be running on 98 and they're running on 91,
mm-hmm.
then they're just not going to get the power.
They'll ping and carry on. They won't like it.
Yep. Mm. And sorry, Ian, where I was heading to before, and thanks for actually explaining that the use of the ratings. But if a fuel sits around for some time, and so therefore it may be, say, a cheaper brand of fuel that's coming into Australia that's been hanging around, say, for quite some time.
Yeah, the fuel, it'll go off, it goes
it'll
bad.
Goes
yeah,
off,
it
yeah.
goes bad,
and,
you know. Yeah.
And therefore, I know this is probably against what we've been saying a lot of times, but a service station in the middle of the nowhere that doesn't seem to have a lot of traffic, they've got fuel sitting in their tanks possibly quite long.
I have heard the reports about what this happening, and people, it's cost them a lot of money to get their whole engine stripped, fuel system cleaned out. So you've got to be very, very careful. You've got to be a service station where fuel is moving all the time.
I
get fuel when it's cheap. I get the 95, I get two 10-litre containers of fuel, which I use in the bike, and but that only lasts 2 weeks. That's it. So I never let it sit very, very long at all. I think you find if you let it sit for a month, 6 weeks, I think the fuel itself starts to go off.
Yeah, yeah. Modern fuel has a shelf life of about 3 months.
So, and
you really don't want to get it at the end of the 3 months.
No.
I mean, years ago, it would go 10 months. And but these days, because the fuel is so... I guess you could call it chemically, it's much more complex than it used to be.
Yeah.
And so because the many different grades, I mean, when I was a kid, we had super.
And standard.
Yeah. That was it.
Yeah.
Now there are so many different types of vehicles that so they need different types of fuel. Chemically, they're different compositions. And it's much more sensitive to just sitting around doing nothing.
And then you've got the additional complexity that's been thrown in with the ethanol addition to it as well.
Yes.
So the E10, which basically means you've got 10% ethanol added to that particular brand.
Yes, which is one thing which you'd come across when you travel. And because I'm running... where I had the Bandit, I was running a 91, especially if you go into New South, because we did a trip up to the Blue Mountains a few years ago, and we jagged a good weekend. The guy I spoke to local said, you've jagged a good week, because normally we have to rain horizontal this time of the year, and we had sunshine, so I jagged a good week. But they have a lot of ethanol in the service stations, and we worked out that the E94 was the better one to run, not the E91. We got lousy consumption out of the E91. The E94 worked well.
Yep, and again, just a word of warning there, ethanol is actually, again, designed to burn hotter. And I actually found this out the hard way through a small motor that we had, so a whippersnipper. And I was running standard... unfortunately, it did have ethanol in it. And all of a sudden, you know, I was having problems with this motor. We took it into the mechanic, and the first thing he said was, "Well, this has been running very hot. You know, the plugs were just bright, were white, and so
and all the little rubbers were melted.
Yes. So yes, and the ethanol does that
it
too.
Does.
Well, if depending if the motor's not designed for it, it will damage.
This motor was not designed for it. The thing that annoyed me is that the service station I was getting it from was actually not advertising it as ethanol.
Ah, right.
That was the thing that annoyed me. Now, this is a few years back, and since then they have actually started advertising E10 as an option as well. But at that stage they weren't. It was expensive.
Mm.
So,
well, I guess the thing that to know is that if your vehicle is recommended at a particular octane, then you may be able to run it with one of the ethanols. But you have to remember that you're not going to get as good a fuel efficiency
and you're not
going to get as good a power rating.
No. Mm. No, but that's why we said when we travel, if there's the only alternative is an e-fuel, we go for 94. That seems to work quite well.
Mm.
I've used that in the Bandit and I've used it in the V-Strom because we went up to...
E94, that's a percent, 94%. Ethanol.
It's an E10, but it's 94 octane.
Okay.
So in other words, I'm getting up towards that 95. So, yeah.
I'm actually quite glad that Belinda's riding the waves musically as opposed to physically, because at the moment I think it's too cold to go surfing.
Oh, just a bit of a wimp, huh? You don't come from Mount Gambier.
No, definitely not. Okay, now we've spoken about Samrats, we've spoken about petrol. Now, there's probably something much, much more important in your vehicle, and that's oil. And again, I know that Ian spent many, many, many a campfire night talking, regaling the values and the bad points about oils and having the wrong oil as well.
Oh, yeah.
So... again, how important is oil in your vehicle? Not just the motorbike, anything.
Well, the oil lubricates it. It stops it wearing. It makes all the parts work correctly. It gives you... It gives you gives the engine a lot of lifespan, so you can do hundreds of thousand kilometres without any issues.
Yep. And so can a vehicle travel without oil?
No.
No, there we go. Simple.
No, it won't last long.
actually, in the article that I was just reading, it actually has a very good example, and you can all do this at home. Put your hands together and just rub. You can feel the heat coming out.
Oh, yeah, my hands are warming up.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, the thing is, that's exactly what happens to your engine. Now, if you can imagine no oil in that, that heat would increase and increase and increase.
It's fried. It wouldn't take long.
There is a particular oil or a particular company that says that they took a Cortina and let it run for a little while, then they drained it of oil, and then they drove the car from Sydney to Melbourne.
And did it make it?
Yeah, it drove from Sydney to Melbourne. That's what they said. Wow. So they're saying that their oil is so good, you can actually run the car without it.
Oh, right, okay.
I'm not too sure.
Well, that would have to be some sort of coating that the oil leaves on all the moving parts.
Because I can remember being down at the Compass Cup one year, and they always bring in an engine and they take the oil out and they run it until it goes
it blows up.
Bang.
Yeah,
yeah. And this particular year it went for about half an hour.
Yeah.
It just didn't stop, and they had it revving. And everyone was waiting for the bang, and they were cringing, but it took half an hour.
Yeah. Well, some of the Japanese motorbike engines are like that, because I've seen these tests that they've done. They've run the bike hard with oil, drained all the oil, run it hard without the oil, and the thing's basically fried. They've let it cool down, filled it up with oil, turn the key, it starts.
That's knowing my life.
I've seen these tests.
At the same time, if you don't have oil in your vehicle, there's a good chance that the engine will seize.
Mm-hmm. And if you have the wrong oil, because you'll find a lot of manufacturers will specify a certain grade, and as long as you work within that grade of oil, if you decide to go thinner, you decide to go heavier, and a motor's not designed for it, you're going to have, if the heavier oil will be less circulation, and especially when it's colder. And also you'll find if the oil's too thin from what the manufacturer says in the hot weather, you don't really have any engine protection from the oil.
So once again, you're talking about using what the recommended
recommended oil
for your particular vehicle.
As long as it falls within the parameters of what the manufacturer specifies. But see, here in Australia, especially with motorbikes, a lot of the oils that they say you use this grade oil, but you can normally, because we have higher temperatures here, you can go a little bit higher, which to cover the heat that we have here in Australia, because motorbike engines run hotter.
Okay, I'm a total novice when it comes to mechanics. I'll walk into a shop, and believe me, I've gone into a number of these places where you can buy oils, and the selection is horrendous.
I know.
How do I know that I'm getting the right? What's the numbers I've got to look for?
Well, the numbers is what's in the actual manual for what they recommend. But if you look into your manual, you have a look at your oil chart, it will give you listings of oil and what temperatures. Below zero and the highest up to 50 degrees plus. And so if you're in that listing, then you can pick an oil that's perfectly suitable. And I normally go smack bang in the middle, and it's perfect for Australia. Yeah.
So if you live in Adelaide, then the chart would tell you the best grade of oil to use for Adelaide conditions, which would be different if you lived in the Snowy Mountains.
Yeah, the Snowy Mountains, you'd use a thinner oil. Definitely, because in Europe, they say that in Europe, with a lot of the listings of the bikes that come in, is a thinner oil for Europe. But the thing is, here in Australia, you go slightly heavier because of our higher temperatures. And you go down the motorbike shops and you speak to a lot of these people, they say, yeah, just go a little bit heavier on the oil. Instead of a 1040, go to a 1050. And this will give you a much higher temperature rating.
The 10 being the bottom temperature and 50 being the upper temperature.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, going on, synthetic versus petroleum-based oil.
Most bikes will run semi-synthetic is a very good oil. Now, my personal experience is that I ran the Bandit on a certain brand of oil. A friend of mine put me onto it because I used to use an English brand they don't make anymore. And I ran this oil for well over 100,000 kilometres in the 1250. It loved it. Gearbox loved it. Bike loved it. I never used any oil. It just ran beautiful. But now I've got the 1050 XT, the V-Strom. I put the same oil into the bike. The bike runs nice, but the gearbox doesn't like it.
Okay.
Because so what I did then is, because it's a semi-synthetic, it's possibly it's too heavy for the gearbox. I don't know. But what I've done is I put in a thinner synthetic oil, and the gearbox has calmed down.
So you've got litres and litres of this old oil that you've bought before.
Yeah, actually, I do. I messaged my friends and I said, would you like to buy some oil?
I know you, Ian Lois.
Yeah, I buy bulk.
That's right.
Because going back to this synthetic, I know that my mechanic certainly recommends, especially for older machines, so, and by older he means anything about 5 years plus, you know, because you're starting to get a bit aware, that the semi-synthetic, because it's not refined to the same degree and doesn't have all the other additives in it, it actually works better slightly thicker.
It does a little bit thicker and it fills in all the gaps and it just runs nicer. Mm. But no, I ran that 1050 grade in the 1250, I got about 120,000, I think, and it absolutely loved it. The gearbox just smooth as silk with this oil. Normally the Bandit's got a vertically stacked gearbox, and it's clunky. I put this oil in, and I just kept working this gearbox, and it just settled in. It was a lovely gearbox. By the time I'd done 200,000 kilometres, it was a lovely gearbox.
It took that long to run it in. And then you sold it.
And then I sold it. And if I had a big enough shed, I'd still have it. Mm. But now the V-Strom, they have a clunky gearbox. I've spoken to a lot of people who've got them, and the gearbox is clunky. Especially on the thousands, from first to second, there's a big clunk when you go in.
The 650s are the same.
Yeah, same, yeah. And so it's a very long travel. So with the 1050 I had in there, it did not like quick changes, and you had to do a nice slow, a controlled change into second. Once you're in second, go, because you just worked on torque. And, of course, I just did not like the way it worked. So what I've done is I've gone to a 5W40 full synthetic, which is still the same brand I've been using, and I use that oil in my car as well, and it's running beautiful. The gearbox has calmed down. It's smooth changes. It's just lovely. With that slightly thinner oil.
Now, why do we actually need to? You know, you'd expect an oil, once it's in there, it's gonna it's always
circulating.
Why do we need to change it?
It's depending on the thickness of the oil. It depends on the lubrications in the oil. The detergents in the oil. How much zinc's in the oil. All this sort of stuff. So these are the things you look into.
So looking at actually the way that I figure it, you've got the friction going on between two metal parts moving together. You're going to have a little bit of shave off, a little bit of...
Oh, yeah, it's always there.
So that's going to make the oil dirty. Is that correct?
You'll find it's the oil itself breaking down. It's moisture content in the oil. Because you'll get moisture in there. Plus it's also you're getting carbon buildup from petrol.
Yep.
And so all the detergents are in there to keep the oil clean so you can get that lifespan out of it.
So what's a recommended lifespan of oil from one change to the next?
A lot of the manufacturers now, especially on the newer motorbikes, with the oils that we run, they say 10,000 kilometres.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
I know. If I had an oil change, especially on a motorbike, because don't forget you've got clutch, you've got gearbox, you get everything working in there. And at times, you're working pretty hard. So if you get up through the hills and you're through those gears and you're working it hard, I don't care, old-fashioned way, drop it at 5, filter, oil, change.
And why do they always make the gearbox, the actual oil that capacity of a vehicle just that slightly bit more than what you actually buy in a container?
You've got to buy two then.
You've got to buy two.
You've got to buy two. And you've always got a spare.
We're running out of time. I've got a question that I want to put to you. When I was a kid, Dad always used to warm the engine up for about 10 minutes before he drove away. Was that ever really necessary?
For carbies. For carbies it was. For fuel injection, you don't have to worry about it. Mm. So all I do is I start my car up, because most cars are all fuel injected now. All I really do is I let it idle until my information thing boots up properly, and then my
your computer.
Yeah, my computer. Now my
GPS.
Yeah, my entertainment system in the car boots up, and then I have a dash cam, and I wait until that gives me the signal that's booted up, and then just put it in gear and go.
Yep.
That's all I do. So it's about 30 seconds, if that.
Yeah, I believe that the current instructions are very much that by actually not moving your car, all you're doing is, by sitting there, all you're doing is getting oil over your pistons, which are moving, mm-hmm. but everything else that needs to be lubricated as well is not. Yeah. So you don't, mind you, you don't take off like a skunned rabbit. You take off relatively slow.
Relatively slow. It's about 2 or 3 Ks, mm-hmm. and then you can...
Do whatever you like.
And then you can start, because it's up to temperature, go.
Yep. Okay, now, Ian, I'm going to ask you again regarding if anyone wants to be part of the SAM Rats. You go onto the web page, is that correct?
Yep.
And that is?
SAM Rats.
Oh, okay.
And it's the...
MRASA.asn.au.
That's the one.
Yep. And your phone number?
Is 0427334843.
Okay, thank you for that. And look, there's a lot of people who would love to be on your rides, and there's a lot of people out there, I'm sure, who've got the skills to be a ride leader.
Yes,
please. Volunteer, folks.
Please come along.
Yeah, go for it.
We need some new faces and some more input.
Definitely. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, I hope everyone's enjoyed our chat about fuels and oils. We certainly all learned a little something.
And we've still got a lot more to say about them too. That's the worst thing about it.
Yeah. All right, we'll be back next week, same time, same place. And while we're waiting for that show to come up, ride safe. And don't forget, Belinda is here, just waiting for her with her first song.
And a surfboard.